Welcome back to Out of the Bullpen podcast. I'm your co-host with a new phone. That's right. Thanks to the fine folks at Apple and Verizon. At Mr. Tommy Walter, no more technical difficulties other than my voice right there. And I can use headphones on a podcast again. Thank you, Apple. Thank you, Verizon, for being so helpful today. I'm Tommy at Mr. Tommy Walter on Twitter.
And I'm his co-host, Josh Wilburn at Mr. 30-something on Twitter. And thank you, Verizon, for making our lives so much easier.
And I'm at Robert Lemons, and the Red Sox shit the bed last night.
And on that note, Verizon, if you want to sponsor the podcast, you can go ahead and slide into our DMs out of the pen pod.
I mean, slide on in, because I mean, I'm paying you fuckers a lot of money.
Yeah. Yep.
The water is warm. Come on in.
Come on in. The water's fine.
Tommy did piss in the pool, but that's neither here nor there.
I was in the pool. I was in the pool. By the way, if you don't watch Seinfeld, it's been over 20 years since the finale, so you might want to go ahead and get on that on Hulu. Shout out to Hulu if you want to sponsor the show.
That'd be great, too.
On Twitter. I'm tired of paying for all these subscription services and bills, so anybody that I have a bill or subscription service with, go ahead and sponsor the show.
While we're at it.
Speaking of subscription service, did you see where The Office is not renewing their thing with Netflix and is doing their own thing? Do you know that out of, I think they said that like 70% of any of The Office was watched on Netflix?
That's how I watched it. I'd never seen it before, and Levi kept putting it over and putting it over, and I'm like, you know what? I have to watch this show, and I fucking loved it.
But like 70% of the Netflix, 70% of the Netflix like subscriptions watch The Office.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. It's a fantastic show.
Shout out to Netflix if you want to donate to the show. Go right ahead.
Shout out to The Office in Scranton, Pennsylvania, if you want to sponsor the show.
And while we're at it, shout out to MLB TV. Just give us free subs. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm tired of paying $120 a year.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, come on. That'd be great.
Well, had Tommy not called Bud Selig's assistant and cussed him out, it might be a service that we probably would have some media passes.
They don't remember. We'll see what we can do about that. I'll send a couple of emails tonight after the show and see if I can. Well, I mean, you guys could always just use mine, but, well, Josh has it, but. Free is better.
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, I don't like paying $128, but yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. Speaking of MLB,
Josh, do you watch it when Tommy's at work on the weekends? Is that how it works? Because if with that being said, I would like to have it the other times that you don't watch.
I will. Hey, you know what? While we're talking about, I'll send you my login right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can have my login too if you want it.
Is it the same login as everything else, Tommy?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know mine either. I'll have to look it up if one of y'all want that.
Well, I actually had to log back into mine today because it was showing that the Yankees and Padres was blacked out in my area, so I had to get nasty on Twitter.
Did you lose your shit and call Bud Selig?
I didn't, but I used it. I went in their DMs. And they got it fixed right away. So it's happened a couple of times in the last few years. All right, Robert, it's headed your way. Get ready for the pop of the password.
There was a loud. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing that all your stuff is.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like to stay. I like to keep that continuous password driven. You know, I don't have to think very hard to remember my passwords.
It makes it easier because I have so many fucking passwords, I'd forget that shit if I don't make them all similar.
The first time you ever told me that password was for like New Japan, and I literally laughed my ass off for like 20 minutes.
Well, the funny thing is I sent it to Anne Marie over the weekend so she could watch StarCast because the fine folks at Fight.tv gave me a media viewing pass for StarCast, which I was disappointed yesterday because I went back to try to watch the live Talk is Jericho, and he didn't show up.
Bitches.
But yeah, she popped for it too, so.
Well, see, I need it too so I can pop for it and go back and watch all this StarCast shit.
Alright. I will send you my login.
Now that we're done pirating everything over
Living off the back of Tommy.
There you go.
And he's carrying it.
Hey, and
he's
carrying and the stuff show. That I don't have. If you guys got it, you can send it my way.
I got Netflix, fair Hulu, enough. And I'm sure you got the network. So I don't.
No, nobody watches that.
Yeah,
I just watch it. I just watch it one Sunday a month.
Pretty much, yeah.
I don't even do that really. I just watch it for the old stuff. But
those 24 specials are pretty good. But
yeah, the documentaries are good. Yeah. All right, should we talk baseball?
I mean, I guess that's why we are here.
A nice
cold. I mean, it's the potpourri.
A nice cold opener, SNL yeah. style.
Just off the cuff.
All right, so the Yankees are 29-10 since the show started. That includes today's victory against the San Diego Padres. Paxton is back, 4 hitless innings on 66 pitches in return. Is it smart to ease him back into the rotation?
I would say so. You don't want to risk anything else going bad the way this injury plague season has went.
This is kind of a continuation over the last few weeks. We've kind of discussed that. Like last week, it was like a 20-minute discussion on, you know, what they should do when people start coming back. And this is, that's why I said that, you know, it is smart to ease him back in because you don't want to send him out there and have him throw 90 pitches and him blow his arm out.
Right.
Figurative load.
Yeah, his figurative load. Don't blow that out.
Yeah, keep the load. We need all the load that you can handle.
Well, it depends on. So you're talking about easing him back in. So did he go through? Did he do a rehab stint or no?
I don't believe so.
No, he did. He didn't. He just
okay. So if you, I'm a firm believer in this. If you don't do a rehab stint, you definitely need to either put him kind of in the middle of relief, knowing that you're going to pitch him 2 or 3 days, and kind of ramp up his work. But you know, if he's on the DL for 7 or 10 days or whatever, what is it, 7 and 10 and 15,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
60 now. So if he's on the 7-day DL, he's still going to get his side work in, but it's still probably a precautionary thing, knowing how you guys have been hit with the injury bug. But yeah, definitely easing back in would be a wise idea.
I think that he would have been on a short leash regardless today, because, I mean. You can't go in there, like I said last week, you can't go in there and give up 6 runs in 2 innings. So him giving them 4 hitless innings is pretty impressive after, you know, missing a start or two.
Did he go 6?
He only went 4.
Yeah, 4. 66 pitches, I believe.
Yeah, 66 and 4. That's not bad, considering your starters are really only giving you 6 innings these days and usually about 85 to 90 pitches.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. So, today marked the 9th straight series win for the first time since 1998. Does that mean we're winning the World Series this year? I think so.
I mean, I think so. That's pretty, you know.
Not straight series win. That's since 1998. You would have thought that you guys would have done that again, even in 2009?
Well, I mean, we won the series in 98, 99, 2000. We were in the series in 01, in the series in 03, and won in 2009. So, you would think in one of those seasons that we would have accomplished that goal. But, man, that's a long time, 21 years, man.
Even last season when you won 100 games, you kind of figured it was – but you couldn't that's nuts to really think about it, that y'all didn't string together 9 last year with 100 wins. I figured that would be kind of like a
no-brainer. A given. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have noticed this, like this season, we're winning the games that we didn't win last year, like the games that we should win, we're winning, and we're not losing like 2 to Baltimore and 2 to Kansas City
right.
and letting them win the series.
Right.
Yeah, when do your kids come back down from reality?
I think after the All-Star break. I think
when the dog days of summer hit it.
Yeah, I think it's going to get tough.
Do you think that you'll have Stanton back, or is it just kind of a foregone conclusion that you're not even including?
I don't.
I think he'll be back eventually. Yeah. I don't. At this point, I think Judge may be back before Stanton.
Yeah, I think he is. He was hitting off the tee, I saw, either today or yesterday. So.
Yeah, yesterday I saw.
Yeah.
So what's your risk reward with Stanton? Because right now it's a huge risk because he's not planning. You're sitting there paying $325 million over the next
right. season. Yeah. It's a huge risk. It really
it's
is.
It's all backloaded too, isn't it?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. It's scary. I don't want another Jacoby Ellsbury. I'll put it that way.
Would you consider Jacoby Ellsbury Judas in this?
I think it's a curse. If we don't win in the next few years, I think it's going to be the curse of Jacoby Ellsbury.
We gave him to you, damaged goods. He played out of his mind. I think what was he runner up for AL MVP the year before you signed him?
Yeah, he had. I mean, and it was a contract year. We've talked about it. That's why
we gave him stupid
money. And we lost Cano to Seattle.
Yeah, well, Cano is being, I don't know what his deal is.
Yeah, well, he's playing for the Mets, so.
Boy, speaking of the Mets falling off a cliff, what did they lose? Like 20, what was it? They were like 8-22 after that hot start.
Yeah, I think we all knew it was coming.
Yeah, they came back to reality.
They did the same thing. Just shit the bed.
Fell off the face of the earth.
The Red Sox are what?
16-9 since Robert's debut, so they are plus over 500. What do you think? I mean, are you happy with the way they're playing right now, other than the, you know, way they shit the bed last night?
Until we can win a series on the top contenders, I don't think we're anything better than average.
And speaking of the Red Sox playing top five contenders, tomorrow the Yankees and Red Sox start a 4-game weekend series ending on Sunday with Sunday Night Baseball.
It would be so great if we could sweep the series and be up 11 on the Red Sox in June.
And just to give a little look ahead, Jay Happ and Chris Sale tomorrow. Rodriguez against question mark because the Yankees haven't announced their starters. So I'm assuming it'll be back to Green in the opener. But Adams pitched really well. I wouldn't mind seeing him start that game.
Or they make call up Jonathan, what's his name, from AAA? Osaga?
Brain fart. I can't think of it. And then Porcello versus Herman, I'm assuming, will be Saturday because that's just the way the rotation's going. And then Price and, I'm assuming, again, Tanaka on Sunday, which I think would be the good marquee matchup anyways for Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this much. We got a kid pitching tonight, Ryan Weber. And he had a really good outing, his last outing. His first game, won the game, got the win. ERA 1.29, had 11 strikeouts.
Wow.
I believe that was his first career game, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe he had some relief appearance. No, that was his first game, and pitched great.
11 strikeouts in his first game in the major leagues.
Yep.
Damn, that's impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, up until that point, I'd never heard of this kid anyway, so.
And who was that against?
Ryan Weber, number 65.
Now who is he pitching against?
He's pitching against Shane Bieber, a little Bieber fever going down tonight.
No, the first start.
Why the fuck are you going to ask me that?
Because we're trying to see if those 11 strikeouts.
Hey, guess what, guys? We can all be stat guys because now I can look stuff up and it doesn't cut out my audio.
Well, whoop whoop.
Correction, awesome. I apologize. I lied really, really bad. That was not his first start. He had showed up in middle relief, so he had one earned run with 4 strikeouts, but he has 11 strikeouts total in 14 innings.
Okay, well, I'm glad I took the time to look that up.
You're welcome. just winging it, man. Just winging it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, me not having a phone kind of took the wind out of putting a show together. So this is a piece together episode of the podcast. It was so forgive us.
It was a one wing angel there.
We're all having trouble spitting shit out today.
Yeah, I know. It's the weather.
It is. Allergy season. Allergy year. There is no seasons anymore. All right. So, again, on Robert's Red Sox, Dustin Pedroia looking towards retirement. Transferred to the 60-day DL, taking time away from the team to figure things out.
Kind of a sad, sad time. I mean, he's been on... He wasn't on the 2003 team, so he was on the six nine and 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we didn't win in 2009, did we? Yeah.
Yeah. No. 2010? 2008.
No, we won 2005.
I looked it up last week, but
we just did this last week.
I know, right?
Yeah, I looked it up last week.
04. We know for sure. Last year, we know for sure. Was it 06?
It was 2003, 2006, 2013, and 2018.
Okay.
No, not 2004.
Well, I got it looked up again, boys.
Fuck me. The Marlins won in 2003. They beat us.
He's a three-time World Series champion, counting last year, 07. 13 and 8.
Oh, 07.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 2004, 2007, 2013, 2018. All right.
Yeah.
I got my years mixed up. I knew it was.
All right.
I knew.
Let's all write it down on the calendar. That way we don't forget next week when we have to talk about it again.
Yeah. True remember
that shit. It's all right. We all have our days.
But, you know, to be honest with you, he was the heart of the club. And you know, last night I couldn't sleep, so I was just like doing a lot of bio research and stuff like that. And you know, I would hate to lose Mookie Betts in the outfield, but that's Mookie Betts' natural position. And I think going forward, I don't foresee. I mean, Mookie Betts' defense is hands down probably one of the best, but you know, second base is his natural position, and they actually moved him to the outfield because he was blocked by Dustin Pedroia being there. So, you know, we have an in-house replacement if that ever comes to it. But, you know, I was reading the bio on Mookie Betts, and they said that he compares favorably as far as hitter makeup and stuff like that to Pedroia. So, and naturally, Mookie Betts has already won an MVP as well. So, you know, it's sad to see him go. I'm sad to see him go. But, you know, boys, sometimes you just got to be put out to the pasture and shot. And I guess that's where we're at.
It sucks. And you know, we had that same problem when Jeter retired. You know, it sucks. But good things must come to an end. Nothing lasts forever. So, yeah.
Well,
I mean,
he's not getting a send-off like David Ortiz got. But David Ortiz was a larger-than-life personality. And, you know, Dustin Pedroia was an in-house personality, and no one really knew the in-house personality. And, you know, I think David Ortiz kind of took that, but, you know, as far as what he's meant to Boston, I hate to see that he's not getting his going away party, but he also expected to play the entire of the year, but I don't think that, I don't think that he would want that attention on him because that's just,
no, he's quiet, reserved, and he just plays the game. Right. So yeah. He's one of the few players from that franchise that I've enjoyed watching play. When he's not playing us, that is. But enjoyed watching him play over his career. And, yeah, it sucks to see somebody be riddled with injuries at the back end of their career. But as you get older, it takes longer for injuries to heal. So that's what – I mean, that's basically what we're looking at.
Fuck Manny Machado, by the way.
Fuck Manny Machado.
But I mean, he was honestly one of the first to come up. It's the 5'8" that would swing out of his shoes, and it's kind of cleared the path for people like Jose Altuve that are undersized, underrated, and just kind of come in and play their asses off and get the notoriety and recognition that they deserve. But you know, I'll never forget watching Petey swing out of his shoes and literally like just mash 440-foot home run like it was nothing for a guy his size to do what he did. It's just it's a great thing to see.
He had a lot of clutch hits against us that I still hate to think about.
I would hate seeing him come up in the ninth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those people that you're like, oh God, please don't blow this fucking lead. Well, because you look at who's coming up in the lineup and you're like, oh, this is not where we want to be in the order in the bottom or the top of the ninth, whichever way it might be.
Kind of to expound on that, would you rather see David Ortiz or would you rather see Dustin Pedroia?
David Ortiz for most part.
Towards the end of his career.
You know who Mariano Rivera's kryptonite was? David Ortiz.
That's a big deal too. Is who's he going up against? Is it a lefty specialist is it Mo? Because for some reason Mo just seemed to have the hardest time getting him out.
Pedroia or Ortiz?
Ortiz.
Hands down.
Yeah. But I now mean, if you're going to bring in Mike Myers, throwing that sidearm, I'll take Ortiz.
What about Johnny Damon? No, I'm just kidding.
I like Johnny Damon, man, and I really liked when Josh tagged me in that video from CC softball game, and Damon,
he's still cranking him.
Same stance, same swing. You know, it seems like we talked about last week. I talked about Old Timers Day. Those old guys, they never forget. You know, it's like riding a bike.
Johnny Damon always kind of had that different approach where he just kind of slapped the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like he never. It was more of a golf swing almost than a baseball swing.
But he just slapped it. I mean, I don't know how the man hit more than 20 home runs. I mean, obviously he was juicing because everybody was in that time frame. He just didn't get caught. But I just remember when he came up with the Royals and then when he went to Oakland and then came to Boston. But
He was a big part of that Moneyball situation over in Oakland.
Yeah.
Well, he also
– him and Swish. Nick always reminded me a lot of Johnny Damon.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Damon was a big part of the comeback against the Yankees.
And, yeah. We know, Robert.
He was part of the crew that labeled the team just a big bunch of idiots. Him and Kevin Millar and all those, whenever they labeled themselves the big band of idiots.
Let's talk about how big of a piece of shit Kevin Millar is.
Damn it.
I never liked the guy. Like, he's on
MLB. Do you not like watching him on
the...
No,
I can't stand...
I don't like him either.
It's just something about his face. I just don't like him.
Just do something about your face. I just don't like it.
Fix your face and then we'll talk, okay?
He's one of the best personalities in the game as far
He's got a great baseball mind. I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't know his shit, but I don't like looking at him.
I hate how much I enjoy listening to Big Poppy talk.
Well, you can only understand every other six words.
Yeah, but when him and A-Rod get going back and forth, that's great TV.
Oh, and that's why they're there.
Do you think they still hold some animosity toward each other, even though they're playing baseball?
No. They have way too much money to give a shit about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're pretty much over all that.
We're kind of going off topic, and this thing completely went off the rails. But
that's fine.
Well, we said it's going to be a clusterfuck today.
It's still a fun discussion.
Well, and I'm sitting here thinking like of David Ortiz, and then I'm thinking kind of like with Vlad Jr. coming up and Bo Bichette coming up and all these players that all of us watch, their dads, and now these kids are coming up. So now, you know, I'm pretty sure David Ortiz has a son. I know Prince Fielder has a son, and, you know, they're probably, you know, early teens. You know, how long is it before they come up and it's like, oh, my God, this is the next coming?
Not long.
Probably within the next 10 years.
Does it make you feel old, or does it make you excited for the game kind of put names?
Makes me feel real fucking old.
Dude, getting up in the morning makes me feel fucking old.
Right.
So here's my question to you. So say something, and I know it's not because I know he has, or Derek Jeter, he has a little girl, right?
Yeah.
So say Derek Jeter had a son, and he got drafted by, I don't know, say the worst comes to worst, the Red Sox. Would you follow his career? Would you cheer him the same way? Would you be more interested? Like, how would you feel about that?
I would cheer him until he was on the big league roster.
I would root for him to get traded to the Yankees, I think.
Yeah.
No.
I would have a hard time cheering for him when he played us. I mean, I would like to see him do well, but yeah, I would have a hard time.
Do you think some of those legacy players, major league, like during the draft and stuff like that? So, say Derek Jeter's son was 18 years old. Do you think that major league club would take a flyer on him just to have him? Didn't they do that with like Mariano Rivera's son?
I know they did it with who was it?
I know that it, yeah, I can't think who it was either, but
I know the Astros did it with Pettit's kid.
Right.
Yeah, I mean that's like
was it Paul O'Neill's nephew? Is that who it was? Who it was. That they basically just drafted him because, you know, they have such a great relationship with Paul O'Neill still since he calls the games. I'm pretty sure that's who it was.
Speaking of legacy players, Craig Biggio's son made his major league first home run, and dad, good old dad, was in the state or in the stadium for his three hit.
That was a cool video. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's always cool seeing that, because I remember growing up watching Ken Griffey Jr. And I mean, I was kind of, you know, I was obviously a little young to be knowing who his dad was, but you know, those first couple of years they got to play together, so.
How cool would that be?
Yeah, that was
like if you were, so say fast forward, and you know you were athletic and in the major leagues, and
could walk,
yeah, if you could play, and
yeah,
but imagine like little Tommy being on the same team as you, and you're kind of in the twilight of your career, and you're playing next to your son. Like, how awesome would that be,
dude? That would be the best feeling in the world, because like I've talked about before, just him asking questions about it, just, you know, it makes you emotional because it's something that you love so much. And when, you know, your kids show interest in it, it really changes your outlook on it as a whole. Like that's the same way with the wrestling stuff. The podcast really wouldn't have gotten started if my kids wouldn't have got into it. Yeah. So
how do you think, and kind of expound on that too, how do you think it was like to have Billy Ripken and Cal Ripken and being coached by their dad at the major league level? What do you think that was like?
Man, I don't know, because I could only imagine, like, you feel like you're probably going to get it a lot harder than everybody else on the team. So, because I can only imagine, because I sit there when, you know, the kids have played baseball and stuff, and I'm sitting there, you know, yelling stuff from the side of the dugout. Like, you know, I'm up there right up on the fence taking videos of stuff when Tommy would swing and stuff. And I'm yelling like, "You run harder," you know, stuff like that.
Stop chopping at the ball.
But I want to think it's the same way at any level. You know, it's your kids. You want them.
Even at a professional level, you think that's a little bit harder.
Of course, he has to be. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure more was expected.
They came from his meat bag. He has to be harder on them. He expects them to play well.
So do you think second-generation players have it a little bit tougher than what their parents had it?
As far as the media goes, absolutely. As far as media and fans' perception and perspective on their lives, I mean, they've watched them grow up. A lot of those kids, you know, were at the games and were running around while they, you know, shagging balls and stuff. Yeah. So I think, you know, the fans watching them grow up before their eyes makes it harder on them. And honestly, I mean, look at like Prince Fielder. That's the one of the best, you know, comparisons I can make to something like that is I feel like he would have been so much better if his dad wouldn't have been who he was.
Well, and even their relationship was strained. Like Prince didn't really have a whole lot to do with his dad.
Yeah,
his dad
had a terrible relationship. Yeah. He was never around.
So do you, so like with Vlad, do you, with Vlad Jr., do you think it's tougher on him knowing that he's Vlad Sr.'s son and he's the number one overall prospect in baseball? Do you think at 19,
oh, I'm sure.
What is it, at 19, 19 and a half years old, you're the best prospect and you're the best thing in baseball?
Yeah. I mean, I can remember watching him shag balls during like the home run derbies back in the early 2000s.
I think a lot of it is all on his, you know, his chemical makeup. Is he happy that the spotlight's on him because that's why it is on him, not just because he's a great player, but because of how great his dad was? Like, can he handle that? And I think, you know, we talked about Toronto basically being where nobody wants to play. He's in a perfect spot because the media isn't as big in Toronto as it would be, say, in New York or Boston or Chicago or Los Angeles.
And luckily, the Raptors have been great this season and the Leafs have been great this season.
So that's overshadowing a lot
of the Toronto, yeah.
So, and the cool thing about Vlad Jr. is he'll be 26 when he's up for free agency, which...
And he's going to sign a big money contract with a big, big market team.
Yeah, I highly doubt he re-signs with
the Jays. I won't be surprised if he plays for the Angels.
So, and see, I was about to ask that question. Do you think it would be harder on a legacy player's son to... And I keep saying legacy. I'm assuming that's probably... I don't know what they deem it, or other than a second generation player,
I like the terminology, so roll with it.
So, say you have this legacy player. Does he go to the team that his dad plays for to live in that shadow, or does he want to do kind of a march to a beat of a different, or a march to the beat of a different drum?
I think it's more the organization wanting them because they know, hey, now we're going to get, you know, in this case, if it's the Angels, then they've got Vlad coming back possibly to maybe coach or just do appearances or be an ambassador for the team.
But how many times have you seen that player come back as a coach and kind of taint their legacy because they didn't live up to the same expectations? I always kind of felt like it was kind of a bad thing. So, like, take, for instance, with Arkansas, you know, with their basketball coach, Mike Anderson coming back after all these years and basically was fired at the end of the season. Like, do you think that taints their legacy? I mean, I'm adding more layers to this probably than what I should, but
yeah.
But you talk about Vlad coming back and possibly being a coach, but does that really, like, so say he gets fired. So does that leave like a black eye against them and kind of taint the legacy that he has there?
I don't think so. I honestly think Vlad could be a really good coach. And a lot of that attributed to the way he hit the ball, man. Like we talked about second or third show. Motherfucker hit everything. It didn't matter where the ball was.
Yeah.
They were trying to intentionally walk him one time and he hit a home run. I mean, that's just insanity.
So he was one of the only players that I remember between him and Adrian Beltre that would literally, like, if you bounced a curveball, that was more or less a tee for them to tee off and blast it out of the field.
Why not? I think he would be a good coach. I'm not saying he will be. I'm just saying that I think that would open the door for that option.
Yeah.
And who better to coach you at you know, in baseball than your dad?
Yeah.
If they know what they're doing. Yeah, I couldn't do it because I just get pissed off.
Well, I think for me, if I was put in that situation, I think it would be a tough thing to overcome because you're constantly being compared to your father. And it's like, I'm not my father. I'm his child. I have the athletic ability. And I think that would, I mean, that could potentially, you know, ruin a bunch of players in life, like trying to live up to their father's expectations. Because I think
in Vlad Jr.'s case, I think eventually when, you know, he does, you know, progress and get a little older and more mature and stuff, I think eventually he's going to have to say, okay, you know what? Stop comparing me to my dad. I love my dad. I love what he did for the game of baseball, but I'm not him. We have to move on from this. Mm-hmm. I have his name. I have his DNA, whatever, but we have to move on from this.
Right.
So, I mean, if he's smart, that's the way he'll handle it. Like, not in a condescending way or being a shit, but just being bluntly honest. Like, let me play my career, not my dad's.
Well, I mean, you have to kind of look at it this way, too. And you talked about Ken Griffey Jr. earlier, and it kind of reminded me of it. But Ken Griffey's son never played baseball. He played football. Yeah. Same with Torrey Hunter Jr. His kid played football at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. But some of those legacy players like that have children like that are going a different route.
And I think is trying – what you're saying is they're trying to not be overshadowed by – their parents' legacy.
Michael Jordan's kids. Look at all Marcus and the other kid. They never lived up to that expectation.
No. I mean, they never could live up to it. I mean, so why would you eat
who
it?
Who could?
How do you think Michael
Jordan? LeBron is living in his shadow, and he's not even his fucking kid.
I mean, how do you think Michael Jordan feels knowing that he's the greatest player in the NBA, and he's got these two fucktards of kids that couldn't even like hack it in Division I basketball, and he's like, "I'm the greatest player, and I've got these two fuckers over here that has no idea how to play the game."
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean,
Robert's fucking wheezing. I love it. Smokey and Nether.
That's an endless, climb though, because they would never ever compare to him. So it's probably a good thing that they didn't play basketball because. They're not going to ever compare to what Jordan did.
Next week's hot take, Michael Jordan's minor league baseball career.
The bus.
I actually saw him play in his second game.
No shit.
Yeah, because they played at the time, the team back home in Knoxville was the Blue Jays, and they played the Birmingham Barons that weekend. Yeah,
I'll be damned. That's pretty cool.
There was something – somebody wrote something on ESPN, and they said that they had never seen that pure of an athlete because he started out in Double-A. Like, he didn't come up through the ranks. Like, they put him in Double-A, and they said the way that he – they said that he was always there, always learning, always picking the minds. Like, he had, like, a 221 overall average with, like, four home runs or something like that, but – they said had he continued the path, they said that there was no doubt in their mind he could have been a major leaguer.
Well, he had the mind for it. I mean, he whatever his, personal life is, nothing to do with anything. But I think as a pure athlete, he's one of – obviously, in my opinion, I don't care what anybody else says, he's the greatest basketball player that ever lived, probably ever will play the game.
I agree there too.
And the fact, and the fact of the matter on that, and then we'll move on because we're not talking about basketball. But look at the players he played against in the mid to late '80s through the 90s.
How many Hall of Famers?
The stars that he played against. Yeah. I mean, it's not that way today. I'm sorry, NBA will never be as good as it was.
Basketball's totally different
in the early to mid '90s. It was so much better. Obviously, when Jordan retired for that brief time to play baseball, it was a little bit different, but I mean, it was still competitive.
Kind of like when he left, I kind of compare it to the hiatus that Tiger Woods had. I mean, it wasn't fun to watch; like you had no reason to watch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, golf without Tiger Woods is kind of just it's like
golf.
Yeah, it's you think of it kind of almost like a grandpa sport. I like to watch it. I like to play it, but
it's the quickest way to put me into a slumber.
Yeah, it's a nice game to watch on a Sunday when you want to take a nap.
But everybody likes watching Tiger, but that was, when he won the Masters a month or so ago, like 29 million people watched that shit.
Before Tiger, the only fun thing about golf was John Daly, and that's because you could get drunk, smoke a cigarette, and look at his goofy-ass pants.
And he would play country music. Y'all
know, man. His music is so fun to listen to when you're drinking.
Speaking of, did you ever watch that 30 for 30 about
it? I haven't, and somebody told me I needed to watch it. It's in that rotation of 30 for 30s I need to watch because I still need to watch the Dion one because that was
if you ever want to realize how good you got it in life and like keep flipping on and watch the John Daly 30 for 30, it's a complete fucking shit show.
Yeah.
And it's like, I look at my life, I don't want the $1 million. I don't want 9 wives, and I don't want a wife to stab me.
Some what was it? Somebody told me what he said at the end. It was like, "I'm gonna grip it and rip it, and I'm gonna grip it and sip it."
Yeah,
that's my motto, dude. Like, shout I want a shirt that says "Grip it and sip it."
Yeah, shout out to Chastity for not stabbing me yet.
Yet. Boys. Yet.
You guys aren't even close to marriage yet, as far as I know. So. Just wait.
Give it some time.
Yeah. When you guys move in together, then I'm going to start worrying about the stabbings.
Okay, fair enough.
And possibly the burning bed.
We're not in West Virginia.
All right, so being that I didn't watch the Deion Sanders 30 for 30 yet, and I'm sure you guys watched it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, that was going to be our hot take. I remembered when we were talking about it. Was going to be the cross-promotional athletes. So we'll get to that next week. So let's mark it in our mental calendars. That's what we're going to do. So this week, though, hot take.
We need to do MLB power rankings. That wasn't on there.
Okay, do you have them pulled up?
I'm doing it right now. So Atlanta comes in at 30-24 in the number 10 position. Week 7 ranking was number 12. Milwaukee Brewers with a 2-point slide down to number 9. Previous ranking was 7. Overall record 30-24. Philadelphia Phillies inch up to the number 8 from number 9 last week, 31-22. Boston inches up 1, 28-25 with a week 7 ranking of 8. Tampa Bay Rays continue their slide, but they held steady this week. They're number 6, 31-29. Chicago Cubs have fallen 2 spots. They're 30-21 overall. New York Yankees stayed even at 4, 34-18 record. Los Angeles Dodgers 35-18. They slid down a spot from last week. Number 2, a big riser, which I still don't fucking understand how in the fuck they are even this good. The Minnesota Twins.
Good God, man.
The Minnesota Twins are up 3 spots, 36-16. Do you think that's a product of their division?
I think it's a combination, yeah. I think.
The division and young talent.
Yeah.
And last but not least, the Houston Astros stayed at number 1, 35-19. So if you they're
going to be falling because they just lost Carlos Correa for 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah.
So if you want to look at the dumpster dwellers, number 30 at Baltimore, but don't see them crawling out of that abysmal bullshit that they got going on. 29 Miami Marlins, 28 Detroit, 27 Kansas City, and then we'll just stop at 26, the Toronto Blue Jays.
Not really any big surprises, though. I mean, other than the Twins.
Are they ever going to come back down? Like, do you?
I don't know.
They have the staying power. Is Cleveland going to pull their heads out of their Cleveland and figure out what the fuck's going on?
I think they're so far ahead of Cleveland now. If they just keep this pace up, I don't know that Cleveland can catch them.
Cleveland is 26-26 as of 2 days ago, so that doesn't include. But yeah, Cleveland also has a series, finishing up the series with the Red Sox tonight, White Sox. And then next week, home stand against the Twins and Yankees. So Cleveland's kind of in. Do you think they're in a make or break mode at this point?
Yeah, for now, for the first half of the season, sure. Yeah, this next week or so, week and a half is big for them.
We haven't played Cleveland yet, have we? This year.
I think we did. Yeah.
Did we?
I think so. Let me look.
Do you still consider it early, or if your team is hovering around 500 looking up at the Twins or the Yankees, do you think it's kind of a panic mode, or do you just kind of hope that your team comes around?
I think some teams are probably in panic mode. They thought they would be a lot better than they actually are.
You're right. I'm wrong. We have not played Cleveland yet.
Okay, I didn't think we had.
We've played everybody else in the Central but Cleveland.
Well, and we're talking about hitting the panic button. So right now, if the season were to end, you would be looking at the Astros the Yankees would actually be the third team. So you would be playing, if the season ended today, you would be playing the Minnesota or Houston. And then the Twins would be playing the winner of Boston and Tampa. But if you look at the standings, Tampa is 5.5 games up on Boston for the first position. And there are 6 teams within 6 games of the wild card in the AL. And it's actually even more competitive in the NL, which kind of shows the disparaging difference. Mm-hmm. So Cincinnati, it goes all the way down to Cincinnati at 26-30, and they are 4.5 games out of the final wild card spot. And they're 7 teams within 4.5 games of the final wild card spot in the National League.
Yeah, National League is super competitive this year.
Do you consider teams closer to 500 with it being competitive, or like what is your take on that?
As far as games back go, I mean, when you look at the games back, you're like, okay, they're not out of it yet. They're not out of it yet. Yeah. I think we can write off the Marlins. I think we can write off the Royals as far as teams like not going to be able to make a comeback. Orioles, yeah, the O's are done.
They have 3 teams in the AL tanking, essentially. Kansas City, Baltimore, and Detroit.
Yeah.
In the NL, Miami's really the only – maybe San Francisco. And everything else is just kind of a crapshoot, man.
Yeah. Well, even when we just played San Francisco, they showed a little bit of hope. But I don't know.
Do you trade the farm for Madison Bumgarner if he comes available?
Not the farm.
No, it's got to be just the right trade. It can't be.
So you trade the number 3 overall prospect, the number 9 overall prospect in your farm system for him. Granted, I don't know who the hell those are. I'm just making up numbers as we go here.
How long's Madison Bumgarner been playing? What year is he in? At a major league level,
I think he's in his mid 30s.
Yeah.
So, I'll tell you in just a second.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll pitch till he's 40. But the tail end, I don't know.
Oh, shit. I had it pulled up. He is 29 years old.
Yeah. He made his debut in 09.
Okay. So he hasn't even hit that peak yet that we talked about.
Yeah. He made his debut at 19, almost 20. That's nuts.
Yeah.
No wonder why it feels like he's been around for fucking ever.
Because he has.
Yeah, he
exactly.
Has.
Fucking decade, yeah.
So do you trade? I mean, knowing what you know, 29 years old, do you – I'm pitchers sure you are, still
– God, pitchers are just so iffy.
I think right now, because you'd probably go sign Dallas Keuchel over a trade. I know the Yankees just watched him pitch a simulated game this past weekend.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's move on to the hot take and the sub-discussion here. Because I'm running low on time here, guys, and I know we're going to talk about this for probably half an hour. So, all right, so hot take, with the MLB draft coming up, how important do you think it is compared to other sports drafts? Sub-discussion, Kimbrel and Keuchel are still unsigned. Is it draft compensation? Is draft compensation for signing a player that declined qualifying offer too harsh for veterans, with emphasis on draft and getting young, controllable players? Does this come up in the new collective bargaining agreement? Are veterans more likely to take qualifying offers or bet on themselves in free agency? And that was a fucking mouthful.
That's what she said.
I think it's important, but it's kind of a different and important than, say, like NFL or NBA. Like, you're not going to draft a kid who's going to come on the team
immediately and make an
impact like you would in NBA or NFL. So you're kind of drafting someone you think will be good. It's going to go through your farm system for 3 to 4 years typically.
Yeah. You're drafting on
potential versus guarantee.
Yeah, you're going to get a look at him like you said, 3 or 4 years before he even gets a sniff at the majors, unless he's just blowing it up in the minors.
Well, and I think you've also seen a lot more and used to of the past. It was drafting those kids that are 17, 18 years old and putting them through the minor league system and doing your homegrown talent. But now you're starting to see a push towards these players that are, you know, what is it? You can be drafted after your sophomore year in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, you have to be a redshirt sophomore before you can be drafted, because that's what happened with Benintendi. But you have to be at least 3 years in college, and then you can be drafted your redshirt sophomore year, your junior year, and your senior year. So you could potentially be drafted up to four times if you count whenever you're 18. But you're seeing a lot more push towards those college players, because if you played – so say you're a senior in college. You've already played 4 years of college ball, potentially five if you redshirt. So you've already got 5 years. And what's it take, generally speaking, from an 18-year-old's perspective? It's about 5 years to get some majors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've already got those 5 years in college. So typically they put those college players, they either do it short season. I think a lot of there's a lot of variables, but they typically put you in short season rookie ball. And then they'll put you at the end of double A. And then how you perform those last month of double A, they'll put you in starting out in triple A. So your career path, logically, is a little bit better in college than what it is in high school.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Josh.
I don't know where I was going.
I think it's smart for kids to go to college. Don't take that big money, you know, signing bonus at a high school. Always opt to go to college, because especially with baseball, you don't know. There's never a guarantee anywhere. I mean, how many career minor league players have, you know, played pro baseball?
Oh, a lot.
It's a lot different than, say, the NFL or the NBA, because if you get drafted by the NFL or the NBA, you're playing right away, like we said. So I think with Major League Baseball, you're so much better off going to college and, you know, continuing to get that look. The only thing that you really have to worry about going into college instead of going ahead and going to the minors is injury.
Well, another thing that
switch sports.
Another thing that sucks about going to college, unless you're even with the slotting bonuses and stuff like that, even if you do go to college, that slot money doesn't really uphold value to someone that's drafting someone that's a senior in college. Because if they draft a senior in college within the first five rounds, you're not getting the multi-million dollar signing bonus like you would have got as a 18-year-old. So they can get you. So that's kind of shitty in my opinion, because it's just the way that it works. And Major League Baseball executives are very smart in that, and they will fuck you any way they can.
I wonder if it'll change things the way they look at college kids after the whole Kyler Murray thing this year and the way that happened. And he's like, nah, I'm going to go play football now.
Well, that was Oakland's fault. They didn't sell him. And honestly, as a young player with major league potential, I wouldn't want to go fucking play in Oakland.
I wouldn't either. Well, I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all, but I wonder if they'll be more careful about the giving out, you know, whatever it was, $4 or $5 million signing bonus.
They actually upped it to his contract to $10 million. I don't know if that was a $10 million signing bonus or $10 million signing bonus and salary.
I think it was and salary, because I think he got $4.5 million, and then they upped it to try to get him to stay with baseball.
So, and actually, the hot take was kind of more of my idea, because I've seen that article on ESPN. So with the way that they're doing that draft compensation and the way that we're talking about the draft, are you willing to give up? Because most of the draft compensation is, what is it, the end of the first round? It's for draft compensation, depending on the player and what they sign.
Yeah.
So are you willing to give up a six-year potential? So say there's a Mike Trout, and he falls to what Mike Trout was, what, like number 7 overall pick or something like that?
Something like it was early. Yeah.
He was top 10.
So you give up your first round pick for Bryce Harper. Do you
is that something that if you were to put yourself in the same position as a executive, your team is tanked, you're trying to rebuild, you've got the farm system beefed up from sucking for the last 6 years, and you have the potential to sign Bryce Harper. Do you sign Bryce Harper, or do you still hit that rebuild mode and try to build that farm system up? That way you can have a longer run as opposed to a short-term run.
I would build the farm system up personally, but some GMs may not look at it like that.
I see it the same way. I'm more likely to want to look at the long-term picture than when now, if I have that team that I know is going to stay together for the next 10 years. So you can't sell the farm unless you're in panic mode and, you know, you got somebody go down and you just need somebody because you know you have a shot to win it that year. But then again, yeah, you have to look at it in turn. You have to look at it the way, you know, okay, well, I just gave away the next Mike Trout or the next, you know, Bryce Harper to get one of those players just to win this year. And then look at somebody like Kansas City. They're in the World Series picture for a couple of years, and then now they're back down to nothing because they let everybody go.
I mean, we kind of did that last year. We gave Seattle Justin Sheffield, which is, you know, he was, everybody saying he's going to be the next great lefty, and Cashman, you know, he put it off forever trading him, including him in the deal. He finally did to get, you know, but so.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here. The whole reason why that draft compensation and qualifying offer was put into place was to keep the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and all the big market money spending teams from going in and scooping up all the high profile.
Oh, teams. Yeah.
And that's the reason why that Major League put that in. But has it hurt Major League and the veterans that are in the, you know, early 30s, 31, 32, like Craig Kimbrell and Dallas Keuchel? Is it hurting those players and hurting their value because no one is willing to give up a draft pick for 3 years of questionable pitching on its downturn?
Oh yeah, it's definitely hurting them. I mean, I think Kimbrell was wanting like 6 years, $120 million. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, that's a lot of money for a reliever. But
I think not only does it hurt their pocketbook, but I also think it hurts their mentality and the way they are looking at the game, because they're like, okay, so we're these big money pitchers that can win games for you, and nobody's wanting to sign us because they don't want to give up draft picks. It's ridiculous, and I think that it definitely needs to change when they, you know, restructure the bargaining agreement. Yeah, reconstruct that. Like, they have to look at it like, we can't have this top-tier talent sitting out for seasons because these are guys that people will pay to watch. Dallas Keuchel's been a fucking, you know, number one starter for the last, what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, he's pitched more innings than
and
anybody.
Sitting at home twiddling his fucking thumbs because nobody wants to give up a draft pick because everybody's farm system, not everybody's, but a lot of teams, and including big market teams, their farm systems are in shambles because they're giving up all these young kids that can play to win now.
Yeah. They're going to be – there'll be a mad dash probably to sign him and Kimbrell the day after the draft ends.
And that's when that compensation goes away.
So everybody's just waiting.
June 4th.
I won't be surprised to see Dallas Keuchel and the Yankees this year.
Now, I think Cashman's going to make him an offer. I really do.
So you give him the veteran's minimum because he didn't sign. So, see, that's kind of where they're at. So if you're a generational talent, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, those teams are more than willing and able to give up those high draft picks for those players because, you know, what do they got to lose at that point?
Right.
And you're not getting that same value out of a Dallas Keuchel. You know, if you're having to give up the 35th pick in the major league draft for a chance of a player being a generational talent.
Right.
I mean, I get there. I get that there's some reasoning behind it, but I think you'll start seeing a lot more players take that qualifying offer as opposed to thinking that they're, you know, worth 6 years, $120 million. Do you think that's bad advice from their agent, or do you think it's just
greed? I think it's pride and greed.
Yeah,
I think they think they're in their mind they know that what they're worth.
Yeah, and then they see Machado and Bryce Harper get all this money, and they're like, "Well, fuck, I struck it, motherfucker."
Do you think had Craig Kimbrell not shit the bed in the playoffs, do you think he would have got that 6 years, $120 million?
Most likely,
probably. I don't know if he would have got it from the Red Sox, but I think he would have got it.
Do you think had Dallas Keuchel not been injured most of the last season and pitched well in the playoffs, do you think he would have got that money that he's wanting, or would he still be on the free agent market?
I think Keuchel will still be on the free agent market because he was wanting like 6 years, like 150 some million.
But so in today's age, yeah, then. In today's age, isn't he worth that?
I mean, yeah, he is, but coming off a season where you've been injured, that's a lot of money to put for a team to put faith in you that you're not going to get hurt.
And that's what that goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, trading for Bumgarner. You never know with a pitcher. It's so different than somebody who can either play DH or, you know, might not, you know, play in the field every day, as opposed to a pitcher who, granted, you know, they're only going to pitch once every 5 days, but they still got to do their side work. You know, they can step off a mound wrong. They can, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. They can fall off a boat.
Yeah, just, you know, throw a pitch wrong and boom, there you got to have Tommy John's, and you'd be out of fucking years.
Plus, so,
and there's not very many Shohei Ohtanis out there that can DH while they're recovering from a Tommy John. So this is kind of how I feel, and I would hate it, but I would completely understand it. This is where if I were a player, I would step up in the negotiating process and say, "You have us in the minor league. Our time starts as soon as we hit the minor league." I think you would definitely throw a wrench into the whole situation, and the players wouldn't have to be under control. Baseball is probably one of the most profitable sports, but it's also one of the highest spending sports. Mm-hmm. But I don't – I wish the players would do something, because 6 years of major league control, once you hit the majors, your time starts then. So
yeah.
Like I said, you have those rare instances where you have Bryce Harper that gets drafted at 18 and Manny Machado that gets drafted or that signs the international pool or whatever. And you get to go to free agency in your prime. But now you don't get that.
But probably if the time started as soon as they were in the minors, don't you think those teams will be rushing those superstars to the majors before they were probably ready?
I mean, that's just something you have to deal with. I mean, if you're good enough to make a major league ball club, it's not going to matter.
True, but I mean, they're going to have their learning bumps along the way.
Well, I'm trying to think. Wasn't it? It wasn't Jared Weaver. He pitched for the Tigers, and it was like in the mid 90s, and he was a decent pitcher, but Detroit was so desperate to get major league talent to the roster because, again, they blew out their farm system and had many years of sucking. But, you know, they would rush players to the major leagues and absolutely just destroy their confidence, their ability to pitch and everything else. So, I mean, I get where you're coming from with that, but, you know, the players have to have some sort of ability to speak for themselves. And right now, like I said, you got those kids coming out of college already, and they're 23 years old. Well, they're going to hit free agency at 30, and you're not going to get that. So you've played for one team for 10 years, and now what do you got? You can't sign that big money contract.
They're going to have to do something soon within the next couple of years, or there's going to be a strike. It's as simple as that. Because these veteran players that are going through this shit, they're not going to put up with it much longer before they're like, you know what, fuck it.
Oh, I agree.
Well, I mean, look at the kid that just signed with Japan, 18 years old, multi-million-dollar contract. He'll have to go through the posting system, but that's $10 million that he wasn't going to get whenever he signed up for
Major But with Japan. A league that I was talking about a couple of weeks ago, in a league that's struggling to have that talent come up, you can see it. In today's youth, they're not as into baseball as they are looking at football and getting big money contracts and only playing for, 10 years tops, or if you're a running back, maybe 5 good years if you're lucky, or going to the NBA and making a lot of money and, playing right away and being a star and signing a shoe deal and all this shit. Baseball is a sport that's going to struggle if they don't start thinking more about the players and less about the organization's pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, and this is a stat that I'm very passionate about, and it's very sad, but a few years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, there were only 56 African American baseball players on opening
day. That's ridiculous.
Do you know why there's a declining number in African Americans in baseball?
Because there's no programs.
There's no programs, and it's expensive, and they're not able to send those kids to those summer tournaments that literally you haven't even seen the start of it yet. If Tommy goes and starts playing baseball,
I know.
Traveling tournaments 24/7.
I can remember when I was going up and played a traveling ball. That shit is expensive as fuck.
It's expensive already just with T-ball and stuff. You get the registration fee. Then you need a new bat. You need a new glove. You need a new ball bag. You got to pay for the uniform. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to get socks. You got to get baseball pants. You got to get a belt, cleats, everything. It's very expensive. And you feel like as a parent these days, you feel like you have to get everything name brand. And it's not as bad, I think, as when I was in school. But as far as, if they're not wearing Under Armour cleats or Nike cleats or something like that, they feel like they're lesser of a talent, even as a kid, than somebody who's just got a bunch of money and has zero talent.
Look at the stories that you see with NFL and basketball, the inner city kids, the struggles that they come up with.
Yeah.
When's the last time you've seen a major league player come from, I mean, obviously some of the international players, but
right.
When's the last time you've seen a kid come up with hardships in the Bronx to make major leagues? You don't.
The game's more simplified in basketball. You just got to have a basketball, really.
Yeah. Usually a lot of it is, you see the stories of the Dominican kids.
Yeah. Right.
That's what baseball is. I mean, what's the percentage of players in Major League Baseball that are Dominican?
It's pretty high.
Fucking number. It's either
hot take for next week on that, especially that with the international, should there be an international draft.
Okay, we'll do that and we'll move on dual sport athletes. But on that note, we got to shut her down for this week because I have another show to do in less than 15 minutes.
Shout out to Anne Marie.
Go listen to that podcast as well. And
go listen.
Yeah, give it a listen.
Give her a listen. The water's fine. Give her a listen. The audio's fine. On that note, though, go to gogreenhemp.com. Use coupon code Heels and Quads in all caps and save 15% off your order. Do all that stuff. And probably
it's good shit.
I'm thinking next week it's going to be the debut of this podcast on its own channel.
Ooh.
I really thought about it today, and I think that I want to see this. It'll always be a part of the Heels and Quads family, but I want to see this stand on its own.
Are you doing promotionals for this show at all?
As far as like our own ads?
Yeah,
we will. Yeah. Once we start next week going on its own, I'm going to look into more of that kind of stuff just for this show.
The Heels and Quad Network.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever hear back from DraftKings? I remember you saying like on the second episode.
I didn't, but I need to look back into that because that would go perfect with this show. So I will do that later on.
Cool.
So maybe we'll have a discount code for DraftKings. For those of you who haven't used it, I love it.
I do too. I play the shit out of it.
But don't sign up if you haven't already until we get a code for you. So on that note, follow the show Out of the Pen Pod on Twitter. Follow me at Mr. Tommy Walter on Twitter.
And follow me at Mr. 30-something on Twitter.
Follow me because I'm never on there and Brock Lesnar's a douche at Robert Lemons.
But it's a Brock party, baby.
Oh, my God. Okay. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.